Over some technical problems with the internet service. Studio's doing everything right. We're doing everything right. But anyway, there it is. And I hope everybody out there is doing okay today as we have a lot of chaos happening in our country right now that, you know, if you don't believe in Jesus Christ, it's got to be really tough to deal with all the problems that we're seeing out there right now. It's got to be tough to deal with all the news that's out there, and it's constantly berating us negatively. Constant negative news, constant hopelessness, constant divisiveness, so-and-so against this person, against that person, and oh, this is a tragedy, and oh, that's a tragedy. And we just got to focus on Jesus. We just have to focus on Jesus. And that is the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith. And the story behind the story, the news behind the news, always points toward Christ, because what we're really getting at is the truth. And we do have to make freedom a reality. But the only way we can do that is if we keep our hope in Jesus Christ. And I've been saying this since the beginning of the year. The Lord put this on my heart about Jeremiah 6:16, reminding us to stand at the crossroads and look, ask for the ancient paths, ask where the good way is, and walk in it, and you will find rest for your souls. And it's really true. The old ways, the truth is good. The truth is easy, at least to find, if you're looking for it. And walking that ancient path, it's going to be hard, but you're going to have rest, and it should be an easy burden. But, you know, in our humanity, I think we load a lot of extra stuff on ourselves, and I find myself guilty of that, actually, and we really shouldn't. And so as I go through the news today with, I mean, my goodness, there's all kinds of stuff in the news, but we're going to go through the news today. Just keep it in mind. Christ is in control. He's on the throne. We just got to keep focused on what he would have us do. So now from the front, your daily intelligence briefing on the international front. Once again, Russia putting nuclear-capable Iskander missiles into Syria, continuing to keep that a powder keg over there. Also on the international front, the Panama Papers. Folks, if you have not heard about this, it is incredible the damage that's being done. There was a law firm in Panama that all kinds of international elites were using to shift money overseas, avoid paying taxes, some cases probably stealing from their country. The first casualty of which was the Prime Minister of Iceland, but also implicated was the leader of Ukraine, Poroshenko, several cronies of Vladimir Putin. And the kind of open secret on the street is that it was the CIA that leaked this, or at least it was something associated with that to kind of push back on Vladimir Putin. So you never know, but eventually it'll come out. But right now, the Panama Papers really exposing the fact that the elites live in a completely different world than the rest of us, where there is no law, where they can do what they want to, make as much money as they want to, as long as they get to control people. And that, to me, is the big story out of the Panama Papers. This is the proof we've been talking about. We know it's been going on, but they live in a completely different realm and reality than we do. And folks, don't fall into this trap of Democrat versus Republican, conservative versus liberal, neighbor versus neighbor. Folks, it should be about one thing, the one thing that unites us, the Constitution. They want us to take the eye off of that. It should be about the one thing that unites us as Christians, Jesus Christ. They want us to take the eye off that. And the reason they do is because when they divide us, we become easier to conquer. We become easier to control. We become easier to manipulate. And folks, I don't care if it's Donald Trump or Ted Cruz, a man is not the solution to this. It's not going to be fixed in Washington, D.C., folks. It just isn't. It's going to be fixed at the state and, more importantly, at the local level by us getting involved and reclaiming the control of the government to we the people. And speaking of that, so this international election rigger came forward out of South America. This guy literally was hired to hack computers and rig elections and come up with votes. And so all these people that say it can't happen electronically, it did. And this was what this guy made a living doing. It's unbelievable that we would even say it wouldn't happen. Also on the international front, George Soros, kind of interesting. I'm starting to hear some rumblings right now. But George Soros says that the European Union is in, quote, mortal danger. And I'm starting to hear some folks getting really worried about the economy, that things might crash again, that gold might skyrocket, silver might skyrocket because of what's happening. Now, this thing has been limped along, and I had a great friend of mine tell me once, he's a paramedic, you know, people can compensate for literally months, sometimes years, and all of a sudden they'll drop off a cliff. It's called compensation, and people will have a condition, they'll compensate, and then all of a sudden, bang, they drop off a cliff. And that's really what I think is going on with our economic situation, where we're compensating and continuing to compensate, and eventually something is going to trigger it going off a cliff. Really, it's almost psychology right now. People, the trust in the system. So, very interesting, but Soros is even saying it now, and it's kind of interesting that he would come out and say it, because he tries to say things that are going to manipulate things in his favor, too. So obviously, there's money to be made off of this. Which brings us to the national front. Speaking of money, one of the major banks in the U.S., J.P. Morgan Chase, limiting ATM withdrawals, just like we predicted would continue to happen until they go to a cashless society that is based on something like Bitcoin. And that, folks, means slavery. And I hear a lot of people saying, well, that just couldn't happen in the United States. You know, like I was telling my parents this weekend, you know, we've got to get out of this mentality of it can never happen here. Slavery could never happen in modern times. Folks, that is slavery if we go to a cashless society that's controlled. So anyway, I just keep watching this, because it's going to continue to ratchet down and continue to ratchet down. And once more, above the law, Hillary Clinton with her emails. Now it looks like the president, after he made a couple comments, is clearly weighing in behind the scenes to prevent an investigation. So anyway, folks, it's lawlessness. It's just straight laws. These people think that they can do whatever they want to further their agenda, to control people. And that's the problem I got with Bernie Sanders. That's all he wants to do, too, even though he's not admitting it. He comes across as a nice guy, kind of a grandfatherly figure. How do you pay for all this? You cannot steal money from one group of people and give it to another and expect there not to eventually be a confrontation. It just can't not happen. People don't like to be controlled, especially folks in the west of the United States. And in the South. And speaking of that, religious liberty law signed into being in Mississippi. And that is protecting the right of conscience, which is already in most state constitutions. In Washington's Constitution, you can go look it up for yourself, Article 1, Section 11, an absolute freedom of conscience in all matters of religious sentiment. Some of the most powerful language and strongest language in the entire country. And then also Article 26 of the state constitution, which says there should be perfect toleration of religious sentiment. People don't want to be controlled. You have to have the ability to think. You also have the ability to use your property. And we're going to get to that on the show today with my guest. But that does bring us to the BLM and the fact that judges are now issuing gag orders, particularly for Shauna Cox, to not speak about these issues outside. And you would think that the First Amendment would mean what it says. Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. And I hear people all the time using the Bill of Rights as some sort of a ban on people when it's actually a ban on government. It's supposed to be a restriction on government. And so anyway, this gag order on Shauna Cox and not being able to talk about some of these issues is kind of interesting, because the truth started getting out across the web and people were finding out that a lot of things were not what the government said they were, and that the problems in Eastern Oregon and throughout the Western United States and in regards to land is just going to continue because these agencies have a pattern of abuse that the government is covering up. And that is the big issue. That's the big issue that they don't want to get out in the public. What Shauna Cox and a lot of these other people have been saying is true. And Lavoie Finicum was murdered. I mean, we've talked about the evidence on this show. Very clear. So this brings me to something that's interesting, where the IRS now, this is the kind of lawlessness I'm talking about in government agencies. The IRS, their chief literally said and encouraged the theft of Social Security numbers for illegal immigrants. I'm going to say that again. The IRS chief encouraged the theft of Social Security numbers for illegals. So, now, if I'm a prosecutor, you have just encouraged the commission of identity theft. Depending on how bad it is, it could be a felony. So you're encouraging the commission of a crime. And this is exactly what I'm... This is conclusive proof of lawlessness. And I think really brings us to the, you know, to the point where how much more of this can we take until we dismantle the bureaucratic state and the bureaucratic terrorism that is occurring throughout the West? How long? On a positive note, moving to the regional front, the Freedom Agenda, 4 bills signed into law. Overall for the Freedom Agenda, the current count is we have had 10 bills signed into law by the governor. We've had over 70 hearings, over 80 Democrat co-sponsors, huge pushback on some big things like legalizing industrial hemp, and also having this cross-border ATV reciprocity with Idaho. Some great freedom bills. And one of my favorites, the Wood Stove Protection Act, which allows people to install uncertified wood stoves and use them in an emergency. So folks, we are pushing back a little at a time, but it's going to be at the state and local level that we have to happen. And we're only 2 votes away from a majority in Washington state, 2 votes in the House. And we lost the vote to defund abortion in Washington by 2 votes. So folks, that's how close it is. That's why it's so important to get involved. And that's why I'm going to end on the local front. Campaign season is upon us. Get involved at the local level. Show up, be organized, and stand out. You know, some people have criticized Ted Cruz's campaign for being very well organized and seizing delegates through the process. Well, that's the point. You got to be organized. And that's politics. You've got to have your delegation together voting the same way. That's politics. And some people were very offended seeing that happen this last weekend in Spokane. That's the way it works. You have to be organized with your delegates, and you got to get your delegates elected. You have to have a list of them. You have to have what's called a caucus, a meeting to discuss who's going to be in what position and who's going to say what and who's going to do what. That's politics. That's organized in our system politics. And so what Ted Cruz is not bad what he's doing at the local level. It's what we all should be doing at the local level. We should be organized to back candidates everywhere we possibly can. Everywhere. And if we don't, that's our fault. That's on us. If our folks don't get elected because we didn't show up, we didn't help, we didn't expend effort and time, that's on us. And that's the whole problem with the country right now. We got a lot of folks staying at home, watching TV, not getting involved. And then when they do show up one time, they're offended by the way things actually work. Well, the way things work is when you get involved and you're organized, you win. That's the way life is. So that's what we all need to do, and that's the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that has been praying for the show and for Victoria and myself. We really appreciate that. If you get a chance, go to Facebook and just go to Patriot Radio US, like the page, share it with your friends and family, and make sure also that you save the date. My upcoming kickoff fundraiser is going to be on April 28th, 6:30 at Tretzi Farm. That's T-R-E-Z-Z-I Farm Winery up on Green Bluff. Again, April 28th, 6:30 p.m. Save the date. And I look forward to seeing many of you there. And look forward to talking to you as well. I always love it when folks show up and we can discuss all the issues that are happening around the country. Well, it's my pleasure to introduce Elaine Willman, who is really taking the lead in a lot of property rights issues, but one very specific property right issue on water management and its whole impact on people and the land. So, Elaine, I want to thank you for joining me on Patriot Radio today. And how are you doing?
I'm doing really fine, man, and thank you for having me on. I know we have a limited time, and so maybe I can ask your listeners to bear with me while I paint a very big picture, and I would like them to visualize a map of the western states, because water confiscation across the western states is the name of the federal game right now in warp speed time. I believe they're trying to grab as much as they can before this fellow leaves the White House, and it's really quite concerning, man.
Yeah, if you control water, you control people, right? And that's the whole point behind this. I'm going to let you go. Just start with the big picture and then get the details.
Okay. The first big picture is for your listeners to imagine a large boundary drawn around the Columbia River Basin. And this applies to all the major rivers in the western states. But we'll talk to your listeners about the Columbia River Basin. Every big river system has a federal watershed management plan, and the priorities over those management plans have always been for agriculture and economic development and for the furtherance and betterment of the states. These watershed management plans have had shifted priorities, and they are now to protect tribal cultural resources, endangered species, many other things, and way down the food chain of things to do for these major river basins is irrigation and farming and betterment of the rest of the public. Then we have coming up in the next year the Columbia River Treaty renegotiation. Nobody even thinks about that. This is a big treaty between Canada and the United States. But 53 tribes in the Northwest have been thinking and planning and strategizing for years and are ready to go the moment those negotiations start. And they're demanding that the two nations, Canada and the United States, perform their moral duty and return the Columbia River system to the Aboriginals. And they mean it. And they've got a lot of help coming from both governments. A lot of federal mechanisms are used to capture state water, but one of the things that's happening, and my focus is on federal Indian policy, Matt, as you know, federal Indian policy being government decisions, and I make that distinction between government decisions and my lifetime affection for American Indian history and my own ancestry of the Cherokee and my husband is Shoshone. I'm not speaking of anything that is disrespectful for tribal members or American Indian culture. It's very, very important to me. But government decisions that constitute federal Indian policy that affect my front porch, my person, my property, my business, are decisions that I need to know about, and I'm always the last one to know. And the rest of us are the last one to know. But the federal government is using to the EPA, the BIA, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife, the Bureau of Reclamation, all the alphabet agencies. They're using tribal governments and Indian reservations as launch pads to capture state waters. and EPA in particular, is encouraging tribal governments to become involved in water quality management, not just capturing and controlling state waters, but also managing water quality throughout the reservation. Imagine the Yakima Reservation or the Colville, the Spokane, or over here where I'm at on the Flathead. All of these reservations are 75 to 80% non-tribal, and they're all farming areas. And they all have cities and towns and counties. And so EPA is pushing tribes out to go after water quality for their entire reservation. That would mean that any municipality or county located within an Indian reservation would have its municipal water systems managed and monitored by a tribal government. I mean, that's how crazy this is getting, Matt. Another piece, the big picture, I'm trying to kind of move quickly here, but these are the things that are happening in escalated time right now. The big picture affecting the western states are three things: confiscation of water, elimination of crop production, and the diminishing and dismantling of our national power and electric grid, water and electric grid. The a few years ago, the Department of Energy, at the request of the White House and the BIA, launched the Indian Energy Program. Apparently, the energy for the United States, it's always been a public utility and public energy, but apparently that's been targeted as good economic development for Indian tribes. And they're throwing billions of dollars out to tribes to go capture and take over major hydropower dams, electric cooperatives, anything energy. When you think about that, you think about the taking of the state waters, the water control, water quality control management of waters, funding tribes to take over public utilities, which are supposed to be for all Americans, transferring them from a public utility to a private tribal sovereign asset. That starts disrupting the nation's water and power grid across the country. And when a public utility becomes a private tribal asset, it has no duty to others. So these are very, very disturbing programs, that the government decisions that this administration has been making that no one's paying attention to, or not nearly enough. Here in Montana, I live on the Flathead Reservation. Here in Montana, the federal government, with the blessings of the state, unfortunately, the governor and attorney general, the Salish Kootenai tribe here has acquired the big hydropower Kerr Dam. They now control on this reservation, and this is coming to other reservations soon in your neighborhoods. On this reservation, we have 35,000 residents, 75% non-tribal, 25% tribal. All of us are Montana citizens. All of us have been abandoned by the state of Montana. And right now, on this reservation, the small tribal government has 100% control of all water, access to water, wholesale water rate settings, retail water rate settings. This reservation has electricity. It has Mission Valley Power Company that provides all the light bulbs and computers on this reservation for folks that live here, owned by the Bureau of Indian Affairs. So on this reservation, we have 35,000 people at the mercy for their power and water and those rates to a small tribal government that has no duty to them. And unfortunately, our Montana governor, I won't even let you know what I think about your Washington governor, but our Montana governor is in the same ballpark, you know, has said, oh, that's a swell idea, and here's $55 million state taxpayer dollars to help you do this, little tribe. The state of Montana has abandoned the citizens that live here. And the water control over 11 counties, all the Montana counties that border Idaho, are now under the control of this little tribe. And so we're in a situation where the effect of the federal government and the federal funding that goes to states creates puppets out of governors, and our state protections and the state's authorities are gone. And so here, we don't have a citizen, tribal or otherwise, and many of our tribal members are just as messed up with this as we are, because they own private land and pay taxes and farm and need water. We don't have a single government we can turn to. Every single government is not only unavailable, it's adversarial. And so we're left with at the mercy for two things, water and power for livelihood on land, in the hands of a little government that has no duty to us. So you can imagine the dilemma that's going on over here. Strikingly similar to what's nailing the Klamath folks in southwestern Oregon and northern California. So those are some of the big pieces, Matt, that we're struggling with, because they're all moving on a parallel path, and most folks are not even aware of it. So that's why I'm very grateful for a little time with you today.
So, Elaine, if you can, get into, because a lot of people are saying, okay, I got it. It's bad to put it into tribal government hands where they really don't have a duty to, they really don't have a duty to the greater region at large. But what, number one, why are they doing this? Why are they consolidating that power there? And number two, you bring up an interesting comparison with Zimbabwe. I'd like you to get into that as well.
Yes. It's an article I came across a few days ago that I thought, wow, is this strikingly similar? Because we're watching through the BLM, the cattle grazing get taken down. We're watching through the water confiscation, farming and crop production taken down. And then I came across this. Zimbabwe is a large country in the central portion of Africa, known as the breadbasket, or was for years, as the breadbasket. And I just recall vaguely in the late 1990s, early 2000, there were huge government reforms and stuff going on, and there were white farmers there. The country was full of white farmers. That's why they called it the breadbasket, that were being terrorized and run off their properties and run out of the country. And they had to just turn their land over to a new government. And all the white farmers were run out of that country in the early 2000s. So here in 20, I read an article that as long as a year ago, the new president of Zimbabwe, somebody, President Robert Mugabe or something like that, begging the white farmers to come back because they're getting food from the United States, the United Kingdom, and they're getting food from Australia and a U.S. aid program, and they can't bring in food enough to stave off a growing starvation of the entire Zimbabwe population. They have no food. They can't bring it in fast enough. Their population is starving. And now the president of Zimbabwe is begging the white farmers to come back. Well, when you have farming on the Yakima Reservation in your north area, your Spokane area, in the Klamath area, when you have farmers being intentionally run off and decimated, take down dams that can't store water for irrigation, turn the water over to tribal governments that could care less about farming. When you run off the crop production in this country, we're not that far from being a future Zimbabwe. And where does America get its food? That sounds a little dramatic, but everything that's happened that caused the white farmers to flee Zimbabwe is the same kind of peril facing our food production and meat production in the western states. So it's not that far-fetched considering who's calling the shots in this country right now. Does that sound a little dramatic, Matt?
It doesn't sound dramatic because we've been talking about that kind of stuff on the show for a while. The implications are dramatic, no question about it. But it doesn't shock me. I guess that's probably the better way to put it. And it probably doesn't shock a lot of the listeners. The question becomes then, how do you fight this? I mean, it seems like, because not only are you up against a tribal government and all of the issues with tribal law and just jurisdictional issues, but you're also up against the U.S. government, which is funding a lot of this stuff through grants and all these other programs, mm-hmm. and giving the tribes the money, so which is almost unlimited. So how do we fight this? How do we push back on this and reclaim our property rights? And as I was saying at the beginning of the show, you know, we have the right of conscience, the right to be able to think, but you can't really put that into action unless you have private property rights. So if you could address that issue.
I think the first step, so many of these programs are not widely known when they first come out. They're all planned, rolled out, and implemented, and it's a long time before anybody even becomes aware of them. So the first thing every one of us can do is the way I started 25 years ago, and I just get up every morning and continue doing this, is to inform myself. I had to educate myself. I knew nothing about these things when I lived on the Yakima Reservation. And I just started paying attention to what is this secret thing called federal Indian policy? What are these goals of our federal agencies? And that sounds like boring stuff to do, and everybody's busy. But what we don't know is tearing this country apart. So the first thing listeners can do is start paying attention. The second thing is, when I learn things, I talk about them to my family, my friends, my neighbors, to anybody that'll listen. I share the information, and I show up with elected officials, local, from the dog catcher on up. It's amazing how uninformed. I'll give you an example, Matt, because I lived on the Yakima Reservation for 16 years. And the elected officials in our counties and towns there knew nothing about Indian policy. So it was arranged for me to have a dinner, private dinner, with the executive director that was then with the Association of Washington Cities. Now, that's the organization that provides sample ordinances, information, everything elected officials need to know in the state of Washington. They go to the AWC. And I had a dinner with the executive director, and I said, could you please start including information on federal Indian policy for the local city council members and county commissioners and state legislators? They need to at least be informed. You have John McCoy over there and 31 tribes lobbying and owning Olympia, and not a piece of information in the AWC on federal Indian policy. So when I urged this executive director to consider that, he treated me like I had dog doodle on my shoes, would not even hear of it. And there is still no information for state and local legislators in Washington State from the AWC on these federal programs that are taking down and capturing all of Washington's waters and that are coming in and bringing water quality management to those 31 tribes and that are taking down the irrigation system and the crop production. One thing after another. If your elected officials are uninformed and your citizens are uninformed, they're all getting a free pass to just roll forward with all of this.
Well, they are, and they have been. And that's the mm-hmm. problem with it. When we don't show up, they just roll mm-hmm. right over the top of you. And there are a lot of different elected positions people can run for at the local mm-hmm. level. They've never even heard of, you know, water district, sewer district, all these kind of things. Yeah. And that's where they usually yeah. do these policies.
Let me give you a quick example. As I said, I was in Toppenish on the Yakima Reservation for 16 years, and I wrote a little book in 2005 called Going to Pieces about a crazy road trip myself and a gal took across 17 Indian reservations just to start getting some information out. And an elected official in Wisconsin found the book as a used book online, started copying chapters to her fellow elected officials. They invited me out to come and speak to their community. They were getting so badly bullied. This is in right outside of Green Bay, Wisconsin. Go Packers. Lovely big bedroom community that is 80% non-tribal. The tribal leadership went into the local city council there, board, and said, prepare to become extinct. We're taking our reservation back, and we're going to take your municipality down. Well, you know, there's 75-80% of people that are not tribal member there. A lot of big Packer coaches and players live in the wonderful neighborhoods there. And so that town was facing bankruptcy because the tribe had acquired a fourth of their land. They invited me to come out there. My profession is community planning and economic development. They brought me out there in January 2008. We took a lot of, oh, you're a racist, oh, this town is a racist, oh, it's picking on the poor tribe. We took a lot of heat, but those brave elected officials stood up and informed themselves and engaged legal counsel that was informed, and they fought back. And in from 2008 until I left there last year, they didn't lose a single parcel off the tax base. They've established and restored their municipal jurisdiction on that former reservation, and they are the fastest-growing community in Wisconsin now because they stood up and pushed back. They've never intruded upon tribal government, and your local governments don't do that. Your cities, towns, and counties do not intrude on tribal governments, but tribal governments are pushing out on everybody else. And unless you push back, you're going to fall. Then you don't have a Republican form of government. You've got a government that has no duty to you, and you can't even go to the meeting. You know what I mean? Hobart is the only town. There's 1,361 cities, counties, and towns located on Indian reservations. Hobart is the only one I know of where all five elected officials stood up and said, no, we're elected to protect our residents. We're going to do that. I just wish more would be willing to take being called a name while you're doing your oath of office. I mean, you know, we have a lot of work to do, Matt, across this country.
We have a lot of work to do, but, you know, for us elected officials that are constitutional conservatives here in Spokane County, the Spokesman Review takes care of the name-calling pretty quickly, so we get used to it pretty fast, yeah.
Good.
And, that's why they've earned the moniker Socialist Review, so.
Well, we've got a Missoulian here the same way, and when the village of Hobart hired me, the Green Bay Press Gazette was doing hit pieces on me before my moving truck left Washington. You know, I've been called horrible names, and elected officials that say no. Tribal governments are not used to hearing no, ever. And say no, you're just a racist. That's just openers. But that just shows me somebody that calls me a name is saying I'm a moron. I have no argument. You know.
Well, let's take that off the table because there's probably somebody somewhere. There's probably maybe a Bernie Sanders, you know, supporter driving through Spokane County right now. They're going to hear this. Maybe it's through the rest of Eastern Washington. And that's probably exactly what they're thinking. But you actually have Cherokee ancestry, right? So let's get that whole issue off the table.
Yes, I have Cherokee ancestry. My mother and grandmother were enrolled Cherokee. And my husband is Shoshone. My husband's great-grandfather was the when Sacagawea was on the return trip with Lewis and Clark and learned that her sister died, she adopted her sister's four-year-old boy, Basil. That four-year-old boy is my husband's great-grandfather. My husband's mother took care of Basil in his later years. So my husband has very strong Shoshone. We both have a lifetime affection and respect for American Indian history and culture. It has nothing to do with what I'm talking about on government decisions that are spreading tribalism as a governing system to replace state constitutional authorities and encouraging tribal governments to overreach. Every constitution of an Indian tribe gives them permission to govern their enrolled members and their own properties and nothing more. But this federal administration over the last 8 years is delegating its federal authority out to these tribal governments to start governing non-members and their properties and taking over waters. So when everybody minds their own business, life is good. But the feds are using tribal governments as pawns. And the tribal members themselves are essentially oblivious. Many of them object to, but they don't have protections in their government. They don't have civil rights. And they get serious reprisals if they object to what their tribal government is doing. So they have to be quiet. And they look to us noisy ones to speak on their behalf. And I speak on the behalf of tribal members as much as I do anyone else. This is hurting all of us.
Well, and, you know, you've briefly mentioned that you're an author, and you've written it's becoming prophetic, going to pieces, the dismantling of America. And it is becoming prophetic. Could you tell the listeners a little bit about that and some of the things that really kind of maybe surprised you as, hey, I wrote that? Wow, that kind of surprised me. It did come true.
Well, it was a life-changing experience for me. I call it our Thelma and Louise trip because me and a videographer gal, the two of us go from Washington State to New York across 17 Indian reservations, and the goal was to capture the reality that mainstream media won't talk about on these reservations. So we held the camera up to tribal members, teachers, farmers, bankers, sheriffs, everybody that lived on that reservation, and we just said, what's happening here? What's working for you? What isn't working? And they just opened up. Nobody had been willing to even hear them. And so we captured, and it got worse as we drove east. And so we were going to do a little documentary, but we captured 130 hours of film and could not get it into a documentary when we promised everyone we would get their story told. So I was a medical transcriptionist as a young gal and fast typist, and I decided I will just relive the trip. I will just transcribe verbatim off of the video everything everybody said, and that's the book of Going to Pieces. And the goal was that the folks in the across the country would be interested in a strange trip two ladies took, but as they read through the journey, they would accidentally become educated on federal Indian policy. Now, that book came out in May of 2005, and it has sold well consistently. It is going off the charts now in 2015 and 2016, because the things the folks were worried about, tribal members and non-tribal members, 11 years ago, is right in our face right now. And none of us could have predicted that. It just got worse. But the very things they were worried about, water and law enforcement and jurisdictional conflicts and bullying tribal governments and the Indian Child Welfare Act, which is a brutal tool used against tribal members, a lot of things that folks were worrying about then are really flamed up now. So the book is still selling really big. In fact, we just did a reprint that's now available online. And then I very recently, in March, assembled some of my writings and papers and some of the successful work we did with the Village of Hobart, and I put a reference manual together for community members and elected officials, and we just launched that March 18th. That's in stores and on Amazon.com, and that's called Slumbering Thunder. And it's a primer for confronting overreaching federal policy and tribalism being spread across America. These tribal governments are not doing anything that is not being facilitated and pushed by the current executive branch and federal agencies. They have their own constitutions, but they are given expanded governing authority by all these federal agencies.
And I don't think a lot of people understand the abuse that's going on out in the West. I don't think that I'm going to kind of shift gears a little bit, but I just don't think that people understand the abuse that's actually going on, and not just in this respect, but also in the land use respect with the BLM and the Forest Service and all of those things. Can you give a couple examples that you've heard on the trail and talking to different folks of those types of abuses and kind of make it real for the listeners?
I'll quickly mention a couple of Indian Child Welfare Act cases. That's where the Congress granted tribal governments, they removed parental authority from enrolled tribal members and granted the tribal governments parental authority. And the reason they did that is that the tribal lobbyists were all in there wringing their hands in D.C. saying, oh, my people, we have to keep our culture. And so Congress gave the tribal governments parental authority. And they use that parental authority to keep the population on their reservations, because 3 out of 4 American Indians have long ago left the reservation. There's very few remaining. It's 0.5% of our whole population are enrolled tribal members. So they use the Indian Child Welfare Act to keep their population numbers up for federal funding, and they also use it as a punishing tool. And here in on the Yakima Reservation and on the Flathead Reservation and on the every reservation I have lived on, I have worked with tribal parents whose children were removed from their home by the tribal protection services because the parents had stood up in a meeting and disagreed with some tribal government program and then received a knock on their door saying, you're a bad parent, we're taking your children. We're very recently here on the Flathead. I've been working with 2 or 3 families who objected to the tribal government having the Kerr Dam. One family has lost 2 children. They've been gone for 11 months. They don't even know where their children are. The reprisals an enrolled tribal member goes through if they disagree with their government it's just unimaginable that things like that happen in the United States. That's why my work is just as focused on the pain and the suffering and the continued squalor that's going on for families on Indian reservation, tribal families, as for the rest of us, you know? Yeah, another issue was when I first moved here. This is the way they play the water game. I moved here July 1st on the Flathead, and neighbors had come and helped me move. And one of my neighbors had 200 acres in peas. And just coming to peak July when we had that enormous heat wave, the tribe cut his water off. His whole peace crop was scorched. He managed to salvage about 20%. About the time he got it all harvested, they turned his water back on. And we've had cattle farmers out here who had to move thousands of head of cattle because they lost their stock water. And so they relocate all those cattle, and the moment they relocate the cattle, the tribe turns the stock water back on. Ugly games are being played with this tribal authority over water, over children, over too many things that are not in anybody's best interest.
Well, Elaine, if anybody wants to get a hold of you, and by the way, I just need to say this is the American Christian Network. This is Matt Shea broadcasting live from the capital of Free Washington in Spokane Valley with Elaine Willman, great expert author on water management and all the other things that are attendant to what's going on here in the West. And I wanna highlight one thing specifically. There are a lot of you out there that ask me, hey, is there anybody that broadcasts from Montana? Is there anybody out there that maybe, you know, has a radio program? Yes, there is. And I want to tell you who that is. That is Jim White, who's from Montana with Northwest Liberty News, and he is broadcasting 8 p.m. right before my replay at 9 o'clock every evening. So if you want to catch somebody that has kind of a Montana perspective, Jim White's your man. All right, I want to ask you real quick, Elaine, if you could, for people that want to find out more about you, they want to get more information, they want to read your articles, and you've got a couple great articles out there, how can they find you?
They can YouTube my name, Elaine Willman, I'm not YouTube, but Google, last name Willman, Elaine Willman. They can just Google my name and a lot comes up, including a lot of criticism of me because, you know, they like to call me racist. You can also Google Elaine Willman YouTube, and there's about 8 videos. Also on Jim White, I know Jim White. I just did an interview, radio interview with him yesterday, Matt, and that podcast is probably up by now. He's a marvelous, marvelous force for good here in this area, so I'm really delighted that you mentioned him.
Absolutely. I love Jim.
I do, too. My email address for anybody interested in it with any questions or wanting information is Toppin, T-O-P-P-I-N, at AOL.com. That's my email address. My books, Going to Pieces and Slumbering Thunder, are on most of the book sites, and you can get them in an e-book or paperback. Those are on the website. And I don't mind giving out my phone number. I've had this number for 20 years, and I enjoy calls. People are usually very respectful, and most just want information. So my phone number is area code 509-949-8055. I really appreciate the chance to spend some time with you, Matt. Thank you for that.
Absolutely, Elaine. And in the last couple minutes we got, if you could, give a message out to the young people out there. We always forget them, it seems like, in a lot of these discussions. If you had some young folks standing in front of you right now, what would you tell them, especially in these fights in the West?
Well, the sad thing is that the younger generations did not get our American history. They did not learn the Constitution. They did not get all the American values in school. And so they're kind of free-floating. And so I really encourage young people to get active with groups that are already on the ground in their local communities, church, I don't care what the group is, church groups, whatever, and start talking about what it means to be an American. You know, we don't even use the word American anymore because it offends some people. But young people need to know that. And the other thing for seniors my age, 60s, 70s, we're the ones that did get the American values. And I think every senior citizen, I don't care if they're sitting in a wheelchair, they need to talk to their families and friends and people about what America means to them and what our country really is, its true value and its true purpose. We need, the senior citizens can be a real force here in talking to their children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. We can restore the family and the family information and the communication, and then we're a greater force with our elected officials. So that would be kind of my challenge to the young and the old.
Wow, I couldn't have said it better. And by the way, you had the quote of the day. I just posted it up here with one of your articles on Patriot Radio's Facebook page. But the quote of the day, I think, really sums up what you just said, that You know, if when everyone minds their own business, everything's good. And that's what we're going to end on today. Elaine, thank you very much for joining me on Patriot Radio.
Thank you very much, Matt. And thanks to your listeners as well.
All right. God bless you. Keep up the fight.
Thank you.
Elaine Woolman, folks.
Bye-bye.
And we have posted the spreading epidemic of tribalism in America online right now. Just phenomenal article and a great perspective, too. You know, somebody that is of Cherokee and Shoshone ancestry talking about how tribal governments are being co-opted by the federal government to continue federal government overreach because they're harder to get to and harder to push back against. Just a phenomenal perspective and phenomenal approach. Well, folks, I want to also mention to you that we have on Patriot Radio a lot of different things going on and events going on that I'm a part of and that I try to publicize on here. But one of them coming up is my annual Freedom Dinner, and it's my kickoff fundraiser. It's going to be April 28th, 6:30 p.m. at Tretzi Farm Winery. You're all welcome. There's going to be more information coming up online. It's $25 a person, and it's always a fun time, not only to fellowship and talk about issues, but also to make sure that we are honoring the folks that are doing the work, that are the unsung heroes in the community. And I love that part of it. Not only grassroots leaders, but also our veterans as well. So if you get a chance, check it out on Facebook, and I will make sure also to get more information about how you can sign up and get your friends and family there. And again, it's a great venue out there at Tretzi Farm Winery. Well, this is Matt Shea. Thank you, everybody that's been listening. And I really appreciate Elaine Woolman. Remember that name. She's going to be on here again in the future. May God bless all of you. May he make this generation the greatest one.